Welcome to the User Defenders Podcast, where we interview successful UX designers who fight for the user in order to inspire and equip you to do the same. And now, here's your host, Jason Ogle.
Greetings, User Defenders. Welcome to Episode 4. Today, I'm thrilled to bring you another inspiring interview, this time with web pioneer Christopher Schmidt. Really enjoyed talking to Christopher. I called him Chris because I'm lazy, but he said that's okay. Anyway, we waxed nostalgic on the early days of the web. A lot of really interesting stuff. Don't want to delay any further. Enjoy this interview with Christopher Schmidt. Christopher Schmidt is one of the pioneers of web design. He's a member of the Web Standards Project and author of several books, including the O'Reilly-published CSS Cookbook. He's the founder of Heat Vision, a web design and new media publishing studio. And he's also the co-founder of Environments for Humans, in which he hosts well-attended online conferences such as CSS Summit and jQuery Summit. Welcome, Christopher. I'm super excited to have you on the show today.
Oh, thanks for having me, Jason. It was great.
So I'll start the show today with kind of the theme we have. I've broken this up into three themes, and the first one is about secret identity, you know, and every superhero has one. Would you take a few moments just to give us a glimpse into your personal life and kind of the sort of things you like to do when you're not working?
Yeah, I guess so. What am I doing when I'm not working? That's probably the problem right there. I just got back from a movie festival. And just totally enjoyed that. My partner and I are just, we this year we made kind of commitment to like see other conferences and other festivals that we normally wouldn't go to. And so we've been trying to do that this year. And so we went to the Alamo Drafthouse Fantastic Fest, which has been awesome. And so time out for that. Right now I'm kind of collecting original comic book art from the 80s.
Sweet.
And 90s, with the advent of you know, not with advent computers, that's kind of a stupid cliche thing to say, but with computer technologies being so advanced now that just a lot of your modern comic books are just being done in the computer. And so, which is great, which is awesome, you know, saves paper and saves time and makes things more mainstream. However, the price of paper has gone up. I don't know how that works out.
Right.
But, so price of comic books have gone up or whatnot, but the ability for the artist, and I guess, I'm not sure, I guess the lettering or whatever, sort of just has, it can all be rearranged and edited a million ways to Sunday, which is sort of like what the web can be as well. But back in the old days, like they would have to draw it out and they would have the script and then a letterer would get it and have to like physically draw on top of the artwork, you know, where balloons and thought balloons and all the like all the meanwhiles go on there. And so these are kind of like, this is my thing. I just love it, get these artifacts of these old not old comics, but you know, comic pages, one that I grew up with, you know, and just like, hey, this is and just seeing how just the physical medium is needed, this artifact from the physical world is needed to create a comic book. And just call me get off my lawn, you know, hashtag get off my lawn. It's just like I just, you know, the comic books from the mainstream presses like Marvel and DC, I'm not really into them because I feel like they are a little bit too polished.
Tell us your starting out story. What inspired you to pursue UX design as a career?
Well, I got into web design back when I was like 93 92, and I was trying to find, I was in design school at the time, and I was trying to find a way to design slash publish to as many people as I could with that was cheap and easy to do, and because I was studying print design, and I was just like, I was not enjoying the concept of working for someone in a print project and then making sure that they, you know, if my client had all the, all, you know, would, if I made a mistake somehow, and I would just have to eat the cost of the printing project if I make mistakes. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh man, I really do not want to do that because I will make a mistake down the road and do the financials part of that. And it's just, there's so many variables with printing, and I love printing.
Yeah.
design and printing print projects. And so it's one of the few things I think we look for CSS DevConf that we do, which is our traditional conference, is actually all the print physical objects that we have to make to support the conference. So it's both Ari and I are trained designers that way. So, but yeah, and so then I found, I guess the short story is I found the web, but I was, before then I was looking at, there's something called Microsoft Help Files. And everyone had a PC at the time, Windows PC. So I was actually trying to research how to kind of hack these Microsoft Help Files that came with almost every application and some of that. So you, and because it, I felt like that was almost a universal printing, digital publishing platform, because if you had a PC, you could actually run these print files. And so, and then I stumbled across the web, and I was like, oh man, this is awesome. This is the great, great thing. And so I was kind of, and actually at the time, I was just kind of just goofing off with it. And I showed my design mentor in college. It was just like, yeah. So this is what the web can do. This is pretty whatever. And, you know, at the time you just do like simple GIF headers and maybe some JPEGs and then a bullet point list with, you know, with bullet point lists were like these like little eye candy, little gumdrop type of things and off to the side. And then she said, like, Chris, you should go into web design. And I turned my head and I looked at her. I was like, what the hell is web design? As I have no idea what you're talking about. And then I found, shortly after that, I found David Siegel's Creating Killer Websites book.
Yes.
And Linda Wyman's Designing Web Graphics book. And both just blew my mind. It was it was pretty awesome. And so I just researched every page of both books. And then I just dove right into it and spent a lot of time trying to hack HTML and CSS and build web pages. I started building pages for my school at the time, college. And then I slowly got a paying job, which is crazy, which was, I think my desk was actually in a utility closet for my web first design job. It was like this retrofitted utility closet. And then that kind of grew to three total people, and I moved out to better other things like agency that actually did design print work and stuff like that. And so that's sort of how it happened. I'm not sure that's really a cool story at all.
But no, of course,
it is,
and I think that it's important to mention too that after reading those books, you actually got to work with those people. You got intern with those people. I think that's really just an important thing to mention. And because I'll tell you that book is what got me started too. That book inspired me and I just ate it up. I think I read it in like a night and I just couldn't wait to apply those things. And, obviously a lot's changed since then, but yeah. I mean, let's be honest, David Siegel was one of the pioneers too. I mean, he really set a lot in motion as far as actually using these boxes for design elements.
Yeah. I mean, it's like what any designer has to do is just use the materials that they're given,
yes,
that they can use. And, people will decry HTML table layouts now, but back then, that's what we had to work with. And so,
absolutely.
And some instances, table layouts are still, they'll still work. But yeah, so it was just, just using what you can to make it work. And we still get that, we still get blog posts about that. And, you never think about using XYZ to, do ABC on your web design. And so, it's just people just being resourceful on the web and to make cool stuff. And that's what we had to work with back then. And so
that's right. We were scrappy.
Yeah.
Right. I love that.
Yeah. And so I do, there's this whole thing of, mobile though, the new iOS, layout and the Android and like the material design and everything being kind of flat. People just like, hey, the depth of wood design. And I do feel the death of that because I feel like a lot of things were visually organic, which is kind of weird to say back in the 90s, a lot more. And just feel like there was a lot more Photoshop work involved, which is kind of crazy to say, but I feel like more graphics and more things. Like now we have the big battle cry right now is just like everyone has a big honking JPEG, you know, on their masthead, and then just vector icons and some of that too. So, but and it's justified means, I guess, for performance.
Yeah, and I agree with you. You know, it's, I appreciate too the kind of the nostalgia that we can talk about right now. And there's a lot of people listening to this who are kind of just starting their careers. And so to be able to sort of shed light too on kind of how things were, you know, I mean, we sound like old men, but you know, even though we're not, but I think that you touched on something really interesting though about design in general. And, you know, with a small mobile device, is there a way to fit, you know, a lot of bitmapped kind of JPEG graphics? I don't know. Maybe there will be, maybe there is, maybe we haven't discovered it yet, but I feel like with some of these advancements, which are great, I feel like we've lost some of our soul. Would you agree with that?
I have to say yes to some degree, because I feel like we're kind of being able to cookie cutter a lot of things.
Yes.
And do a lot of frameworks and make things easier and roll them out pretty faster. So we're relying on a lot of things like that. But also I feel, we're asking web designers, web design to do a lot more. If it wasn't for, you know, the advent of Google Developer Tools, Grunt and Gulp, and to automate a lot of things, SAS, to do a lot of pre-processing and, you know, stuff like that, I feel like we wouldn't be able to design 4 versions of a website, you know, and have them stack and live next to each other, and CSS, you know, JavaScript rules, which I think is a crazy idea when you think about it, right? It's just like, if you actually go back in the 90s, like, hey, this is a great website, but I need 3 of these versions to go with it, and they live in the same, you know, CSS rules. Not that you would actually build it that way, but I'm trying to work on a project right now where, you know, the desktop is the legacy view of it, but at the same time, and by legacy, I'm kind of scratching that word out and actually put luxury into that. And so where we can actually bring back that kind of the soul version of it and say, like, if I know that this person has a high bandwidth, has a desktop version, what can I add to make this more visually appealing and make them want to stick around a little bit more and say that this doesn't look like flat color material design or whatever. So there's still a lot of things you have to deal with, but that's kind of my trying to answer that with dealing with the soul is just like, and I'm not sure if that's a great answer, because I feel like it's almost like being a fuddy-duddy, like old school, like, get off my lawn, you know, like, I'm going to keep on working on the desktop version, but maybe, you know, with iPad Pro or Surface Pro 3, you know, where that can handle a lot more material out there, it would be, you know, great to actually say, you know, we'll launch a version with, you know, flat design, but then we'll kind of come back to it and see how we can flush out a more like luxury type of website version for the bigger websites.
Yeah, certainly many more complexities now to be considered, not discounting that at all. And I think that, we're doing the best we can with what we have, but I always think that we can do better. And I think that's the general consensus with our community is like, how can we create outstanding experiences that work on any device? And that's where the complexities come in. So,
I mean, it's not to like belabor, like just because I feel like we kind of lost our soul doesn't mean like we're not doing awesome stuff.
Yes.
Like, we're not doing awesome stuff. Agreed. Just the fact that we are able to do this as our job is great.
Amen.
So it just, you know, it's a beautiful thing. So
absolutely. Real quick, I was thinking about, you know, I wanted to talk about David Siegel real quick.
Oh yeah.
Do you keep in touch with him? What happened to him? I feel like we could have like a VH1 behind the music, you know?
So. Yeah. He's on Facebook.
All right.
So we keep in touch. He has a wonderful family. I believe he's in Switzerland now. And so he's married, has just 2 cute for words kids, and just have a good time. But I think he still consults on businesses, I want to say. I hope that's about right. I think he's about businesses that want to see the future type of thing. So he's always, even in the 90s, he was also concerned about businesses, because one of his books, Sequels, was not a sequel, but another book was Secrets of Successful Sites.
Yes.
And that was more geared towards like the business of running a website, you know, agency/freelance.
Yep.
Type of thing. So he's always been like kind of a consultant with that. So, but yeah, he's been great.
Very cool. If you weren't doing this for a living, what would be your second career choice and why?
I have no idea what I'd be doing. I have, this is stories because, in high school, I was doing what they call Cretomen, which is Latin brain bowl, for everyone out there. And so I was after school and doing practice exercises for Latin class brain bowl, and I was actually like bored in my tears, as one might expect, and just trying to figure out what occupation I wanted to go through. And I went through as many as I could in my head, like, no, vet, no, doctor, no, because I will faint at the sight of blood. So it was just like, I just went through the whole like gamut, like lawyer, accountant, like I just couldn't figure out anything that was interesting to me. And then my friend who was an editor at the high school newspaper would always see me doodling off to the side and said, hey, our cartoonist isn't here. We need a cartoon for tomorrow's paper, the high school newspaper. And so he just like just dragged me in, and then the teacher advisor for the newspaper just got her claws into me and just, you know, said like, we need a cartoonist and we need someone who's into graphics. And so they put me in front of the Macintosh with Photoshop 1.5
wow
on it, and PageMaker,
yes, yeah. The Quaker, so, whatever that was from there.
So and then I was like, wow, you get to do this stuff? And like, this is crazy. And so I guess got involved in doing design layout for my high school newspaper. And then that grew into being a quasi-design intern. It was an after-school program for my local newspaper. And so I had a great time, which is really, I don't think they do it anymore because, you know, it's all digital now, but it was just a great person who put me under her wing for a few months, and it was a fun time. And then I went to college, got my AA, and then I was going to go to design, and then they actually hired me I got a summer job as a news intern, or just a roving news person if they had something to do. So I'd be the guy in charge of doing the weather report for each day for the newspaper, editing and writing obituaries and summarizing the news on local news and stuff like that. So in case the local newspaper missed a story or something like that, which I found out never happened because the news, local news, TV news always reads the newspaper and then gets the news that the newspaper recorded. But, yeah. And so then I there was an opening for a TV editor job, and I just took that job, and they remembered me, and it's like, hey, okay, cool. And so I was a TV editor before I was 21 at my local newspaper, which is crazy. So,
wow.
Yeah. And so I was charged this weekly publication that came into your newspaper every week. And so I just became infatuated design ever since then. So,
yeah. Nice. Who's been the biggest inspiration in your work and why?
Let's see, biggest inspiration. I don't know. I think, my career is dependent on a lot of great people, who've taken the time out to help me out. David Siegel, Molly Holschlag,
mm-hmm.
The great Molly, molly.com.
Oh yeah.
Scott McCloud, whose book is just awesome. So, Don Norman, yeah. So his book is great. I think I met him once. But
The Design of Everyday Things.
Yeah, Design of Everyday Things. That was just a great book. I don't know. I think, just take bits and pieces from everywhere, pretty much. But those
love it.
Are kind of like core group. And so
awesome.
And Scott McCloud's book, I think Understanding Comics, is just, I think it's the one book I think people should read. It's still, there's so many lessons in that book that that's a book I would love for people to know more about. He talks about, you know, just, you know, design in terms of how much visual language do you need before someone gets an idea, like the simple icons to fully rendered, you know, like, you know, halftone sketches or halftone filling in, you know, people before you realize it's a face. He's just a great guy as well. We had him at a conference two years ago now. And one piece of advice he said is that you can, you can learn something from everyone, and you just have the right attitude. Just don't have your brain, you know, shut down when you talk to people. So
a great perspective.
Yeah.
Love that.
Yeah. He's a great conversationalist, and he'll, if you have a flaw in conversation, he'll make up for it.
Sounds like a good guy.
Yeah. He's awesome. His wife is awesome as well.
Oh, that's cool. So can you tell us about the one thing you're working on right now that you're most excited about?
No, I cannot.
Okay. Do we need to sign an NDA or something?
Yeah. It's not yet launched yet. Sorry.
Okay.
But, I am excited about it. I'm trying, I did hint about it, about the luxury thing, but I'm not sure if I'll have it in place by the time it launches though. But,
okay.
But yeah, so that's, I'm kind of working on something in the backbones and the Skunk Works. But yeah.
Well, cool.
I'm always working on putting on together summits. Like, that's kind of my main, what I love to do is, and kind of design falls into this, is just put together things and see how they work. And so that's kind of like conferences came about.
Yeah.
Was, you know, Ari, my partner, and I, we got together and just had these conversations about what we think would make a great conference. And it's like, we put our money where our mouth was, and so just putting these events. And we did one and as an experiment, and everyone loved it. You know, we did the surveys, and everyone just like was like gushed about it. And so it was really, really fun to do. And we just haven't stopped doing them. So,
yeah.
And so we've done so many since then. So now we started to do virtual ones at the same time. And so it's just been really great to go out, research and find great speakers and say, like, you know, for this, you know, we do like a SaaS summit for style sheets and, you know, CSS and pre-processing, and just to find speakers and that we think people are, would, topics we think people would be interested in, the people who'd be interested in delivering that topic, and seeing if they are free to speak. It's awesome to have them come together and do that. So
absolutely.
And then the CSS DevConf is kind of our spin against South by Southwest. South by Southwest will do this panel picker, and they just like ask the whole world to, you know, vote, and it becomes like a social media contest in a way, in terms of, you know, popularity contest to do that. So we actually made it, CSS DevConf, like a double blind voting. And so that was, you know, what we liked about that is that we found speakers that who we never would suspect to speak at CSS DevConf.
Hmm.
And so, our main story about that is that Rachel Neighbors, who's a CSS animation awesome person. She spoke at our first CSS DevConf, and Tab Atkins from Google was there, and they just, you know, he was like, you know, had some great ideas from her talk for the animation spec. And so, and now Rachel is well known in the industry for CSS animations, and does online workshops on her own. And it's been awesome just to see someone like Rachel and other people that come to CSS DevConf and speak for the first time.
That's cool.
It's been pretty awesome. And so, and each time it's, you know, I sort of make it as a, we were putting on this really expensive party and we have no idea who's coming.
That's a good way to look at it. Yeah. I've attended one a couple of years ago, and it was great. That was where I learned about style tiles.
Oh yeah.
That was wonderful. Yeah. Some great stuff, great speakers too. Let's get into your transformation, Chris. Every superhero goes through one where they are awakened to the powers that they have to use for greater good. So what's your design superpower?
That's a good question. I think my power, if I were, you know, say that, I think my talent, if you will,
sure,
is that if someone gives me something like a layout or it doesn't have to be a layout. It doesn't have to be something designed. I feel like I can look for things to make it better.
Nice.
And so it's like there's a company called 3M that you know, they, like, their tagline is, they don't design a lot of things that you use, they just make it better. And I feel like that's kind of where I add my own two cents to that. But the hardest part is about the, I think, of that is it's really hard for me to get started on my own stuff because I'm the worst critic of my own stuff. So it's really hard to do my own thing. So it's really hard to get it going. But I love being able to see stuff, provide input, and trying to make things better than they when I first saw them.
Definitely appreciate that answer. You know, and just to elaborate or summarize kind of what you're saying, one thing that stood out to me was about taking a business idea and just making it better. Taking something, you know, and I think that's the greatest businesses, the most successful businesses have done that. They haven't reinvented anything necessarily. They've just made something that we need, and even if we didn't know we need it, better. And I think of Apple is a great example of that as well. Yeah. So what's your design kryptonite, Chris?
I guess my design kryptonite is, I really can't say. I think this kind of goes back to my superpower in a way. It's just like, I feel like I can sort of empathize with what a company is trying to do with like a UX area, whether it's like a tour guide or trying to find out what they, you know, the directions that they have for like, you know, a bathroom. You know, if you go to Europe or go to some other country, like, you know, their directions for bathrooms are kind of weird, a little different, not weird, but different from our. And so
yeah, there's a guy sitting in there waiting to hand you a towel after you do your thing.
Yeah. The worst one was like, we're at a park in the middle of this nowhereville and there's a bathroom, men's bathroom. There's a hole in the ground. And I'm like, and there's like these chrome, feet pedestals to it. And I'm like, what am I supposed to do with this? And so I actually looked at that for like a good 5 minutes, man. I was like, what am I doing?
Wow. Was it user-centered design or? Well, so arguable?
Well, I had a ticking time bomb, so I had to go figure it out. But, you know, I guess my kryptonite would be like to when things don't go from A to B to C to D. Yeah, I mean, like the lesson from design of everyday things I think I got and I still carry with me is that sometimes people put in obstacles in your way because they don't want you to do X, Y, Z. You know, they don't want you to do some task. And so, and it's kind of so venting blindly, if you will, is, you know, just assures the designer that, yeah, good, because I didn't want you to fall off the train track, you know. So sounds exactly. Like you open the door, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So
what would your this one's a little more fun. What would your UX design superhero name be, Chris?
Oh, well, I go by Teleject.
Oh, yes.
So probably be it.
There we go.
Yeah.
Can you define what that means? What is Teleject?
It is a cool word.
Okay.
I just put together. It's like
it is a cool word.
Yeah, it's tele, you know, for expanding vast distances, and inject, as in inject. It's a suffix for close up. So like telescope and inject, and just put teleject together, and came together. That's the name I picked. And then I picked that because, believe it or not, Christopher is a very common name, and it's 11 characters. And everywhere I go to sign up for a new web app or startup or whatever, someone with Christopher or Chris has already signed up for it. And I got sick and tired of trying to do Christopher 695,000 or whatever.
Yes.
And so I just decided, okay, I'm just going to go with this name I came up with college, with this word I came up with college, and just go with that. So that's how I roll.
That's great. No, yeah. I dig that. And it's nice to kind of have your own, you know, handle that it reflects you. And I think you've held on to that for quite a while, haven't you?
Yeah. Yeah. And, I think one person has actually called me Teleject out loud in person.
Nice.
Which is kind of cool and weird at the same time.
Yeah.
Like, hey, Teleject. Like, hey, wait, that's me. So.
That's awesome. Well, I try to get, every guest. I actually have a friend who's a storyboard artist in Hollywood and he's helping me out. He's creating art for all the guests. And that's one of the reasons I ask for superhero names. Cause it's, he comes up with some really cool stuff. So we'll get one. I can't wait to see how yours turns out.
Okay, cool. That's awesome.
His name is Caesar Lemus, and he's at Firehead on Twitter, PHYRHED. Super talented guy. Cool. So tell us a story about what's been your biggest failure. I know that none of us, we don't like to think about that often, but it is super important to realize that failure is actually what drives us forward and pushes us to become the best we can be.
Yeah, it's a good question. Yeah, I mean, the human beings in general just don't like to dwell on failure. I think that's a kind of a human condition, I guess.
Yeah, it is. You're right.
Yeah. But because we remember all the good stuff.
But we can all learn so much, even from other people's failures. And I know that the defenders listening will definitely glean from yours.
I don't know. I think not being able, I can't really think of a point because I can't remember, but it's always happened. I think just not. I think the lesson that you need to learn, and it took me forever to learn this, I'm sad to say, is that it's not what you say, it's how you say it.
Mm.
And I think Aaron Walter just does it from MailChimp.
Oh, yes.
He is just a great, he was a college instructor before he worked at MailChimp. And so, I think at least 10 years before he went to MailChimp. And talking to him, and he is just, I haven't talked to him in a while, but when we used to talk all the time, is just that you could tell that he is really great. And I'm pretty sure his team is awesome because of that. But he's able to incisively critique, but with just a great attitude and a great reassuring hand. And so, I'm sad to say I went to art school and the critiques were just cruel and fast and furious. And so I kind of like took that over to the workplace. And I was like, not a great way to make friends in the workplace. So so I would just say, you know, just be able to politely disagree with people is always a good thing. And then, but also show positives as much as you can. And, but yeah.
Love
it. And also, I would say, like, I guess the biggest lessons I've learned is you can do, email is not dead and will never be dead, even though you can't design for it very well.
Yeah.
But
tables.
Yeah, never send bad news via email. I think that's like, if you have something bad to say, just pick the phone and call it and tell the person straight to face, because it's just, it goes a lot further. I think it's a lot better than that. And so I think a lot of people, you know, with the texting and the devices and get off my lawn, I'm an old fraidity, but I feel like if you have bad news, just give someone a call and let them know what the bad news is. And or if you're angry with someone, it's better to pick up a phone call and hash it out or have a face-to-face meeting about it than write an email or stupid text about it. So
I love that. What I was thinking about was just the humanity in that answer. We're all human. We all have feelings, and it's just far too easy to lob a cannonball or fire an arrow from the top of the castle, and it's far too easy. And it's so much more effective just to get much closer and do a powwow, just do a face-to-face if you can, or even pick up the phone, because these smartphones actually do make phone calls.
Yeah. There's an app for it.
Isn't there? There's an app for that.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Love
but,
it.
Thanks
for sharing that.
No problem.
Yeah. Do you have something? Do you have a story of something really crazy or super awkward that happened during user testing?
I think we did a testing once, and I felt like we had everything right. This is the usual testing stories. I think of you have everything right, and then you realize like how wrong you are. About every preconceived notion that you have.
Yeah.
So when people,
tumbling, isn't it?
Yeah. It's just like, oh, well, that's pretty stupid for me. But, and so the whole advice of actually testing early and often is pretty paramount.
One of my favorite lines from Tron was when he said, "I fight for the users," and it's sort of what inspired this show. How do you fight for your users, Chris?
Well, I think at Environments for Humans, where we do our summits, is like one of the reasons why we started doing this was because we felt like ego a little bit. We're like, hey, we can do a better conference, but also we wanted to do an online version, online conferences because people just can't afford to travel. Like, you know, especially with college budgets, you know, there's a lot of people still wearing the hat of one. So we really, we've been putting out these conferences for like 5-6 years now. And just to make sure that we, with the goal is that we want to find experts and put them in front of people's desktop or their mobile, they can connect to the mobile app so they can actually ask questions to these speakers that they could, you know, probably never do. You know, they can just, after they speak. And so it's been a really great, great thing because we want people to learn and then take that knowledge and get inspired to build great things or learn that one thing that saves them so much time that they can go home at 5 o'clock and be with their family.
I love that. And I love that that's an example of empathy right there that, you know, you and your partner, what's her name again? I'm sorry.
Ari Styles?
Ari, yes. That you and Ari, you know, considered when you started this is how can we meet people where they're at? You know, how can we deliver this great content and information and still respect their budgets and respect, you know, their lifestyle and things like that? I think that's a great example of empathy. This is the last question of this transformation section. It's kind of a challenging one, but certainly holds a lot of interest. And I just want to ask you, what does the future of UX look like to you?
Oh, man. I don't know. I'm not really sure what it looks like. I have an eye to the virtual reality. I guess the I forgot what it's called now, but those goggles are making the rounds.
Oculus.
Now. Oculus. Thing. Yeah. I'm kind of on the fence about them. I of course haven't used them yet, but I'm really in love with what Nintendo has done with the 3DS and be able to do that without having to have like special glasses, you know, to do like 3D. And I feel like that's where it's more at, and I just want to see where that happens. And but I feel like also just so virtuality is an issue, but also I think animation and more fluid, I guess more fluid. It's almost like say like kind of like a flipping of the pages for a book, but also like what that translates to as a web page and visit and going around. I mean, we have Ajax and things in. Load in a fly, but for experience and going back and forth, like, you know, for experiential type of site, what does that mean? You know,
sure.
For animation and so on too.
That's awesome. I love that answer. I'm definitely seeing a lot more of VR stuff happening. And even it's funny, just before our interview, I was on Twitter and I follow a Facebook product guy over there and just announced that they're adding in their new profile design, they're adding some sort of option to actually view 360 video. And it blows my mind. And that's just probably scratching the surface. So let's wrap up with superpowers. And these are just a few resources that you can leave our listeners. What's your most invincible UX resource or tool you can recommend?
I would say build the design scrapbook. I used to try to make physical scrapbooks and actually cut things out and, you know, paste them into a notebook and never worked out. So what I do now is I have an Evernote and I just have a notebook called Design Scrapbook. And if something catches my eye, no questions asked, it just goes into the notebook. And so if I ever come up with a roadblock or need some inspiration, I just like go through and do like a slideshow of the notebook and just... and flip through it. And so, and it's been great. It's been awesome. So, so I've had that with me for about, I don't know how long I've had Evernote now, but yeah, it's been really great to have that. So I think my other weapon would be to please, don't do what I do. Just please blog.
Nice.
More often. I'm trying to, I should just take my own advice, but if you blog more often, I think, only great things can happen. For your career and for that. So
you heard that, Defenders. That is great advice right there. And I actually just started blogging not too long ago and it was Zeldman who put it out there. He's like, I won't hire anybody who doesn't blog.
Yeah.
I was like, geez, I've enjoyed blogs for a long time, but I've never done that. And in a way it's it's helpful, like you said, to you and to others. You're serving others when you're sharing your knowledge, and you're also helping yourself because other people will catch on to what you're doing. And so I appreciate that. And I'll keep you accountable if you want.
Yeah, please do.
Okay. Cause I want to read your blog, Chris.
Oh,
all right. I'll do that. I'll keep you accountable there. Okay. If you could recommend, and I know you did already, you recommended Scott's book. If there's a different book that you're thinking you would recommend to our listeners, what would it be and why?
Well, there's the Design Everyday Things is great.
Oh yes.
Back in the day, I loved Mind Grenades from Wired magazine, and so I'm not sure if they still do or not. They kind of dropped designers, and it got more mainstream since Condé Nast bought them. But back in the day, they would have great artists come in and do like a 2-page spread as sort of like kind of a visual theme before each issue, and so it's just a great, almost like a mini design scrapbook, but just a great way of just great design, great artwork. Some of it's a little dated because, you know, they're pushing the boundaries of their max back in the day, but it's really great for inspiration.
Nice.
And then what else we got for UX? Of course there's Rocket Surgery.
Oh yes.
Yeah, it's always a great book.
Steve Krug.
Neuro Web Design. It's a good one as well. And I think it's pretty good. I think
that's a good, well-rounded set there.
Yeah,
cool. This is the last question I'm going to ask you. What's your best advice for aspiring UX design superheroes?
Oh, man, I used blogging, didn't I?
That's still good advice.
Yeah, I think it's I think having a portfolio online. I think Ian Finn is going around. He's writing a book about UX design, how to build a UX design portfolio.
Oh, great.
We actually snagged him. He's actually going to be speaking at the UX Rebels Summit that we're having.
Cool.
In November. So he's going to be talking about design UX portfolios. So we actually have other people there as well. So, definitely have an online portfolio. And you can keep it hidden while you're working at an employer, but definitely have it ready and keep on blogging and just sharing what you know. I think that's the big thing, and that's something I think hoping to change going forward with myself personally. But yeah.
As we close, why don't you tell our audience the best way to connect and keep up with you?
Money is always great. You can reach me at Twitter at Teleject, at TELE. JECT, and I'm Teleject on GitHub, Facebook, anywhere really. And then you can just, I'm at ChristopherSchmidt.com if you need to reach me there as well, too. But yeah.
Awesome.
And then also I'm at adventurehumans.com as well. That's also e4h.tv. That's kind of a short handle for that.
Okay. Sweet. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being here today on the show, Chris. I love chatting with you. I love getting a little nostalgic with you as well. That was one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show too, just to kind of talk shop and talk history. And, you've come a long way and you were there in the beginning. So just really appreciate that and all your efforts in our industry and pushing us forward. So fight on, my friend.
All right. It's been an honor. Thank you for having me.
Great interview with Christopher Schmidt. I really appreciate all of his contributions to our great web community. By the time I'm recording this, I just found out that Christopher is doing a Kickstarter, which is probably going to be funded by the time you hear this, but I'm real excited about this project. He's launching a book on retrofitting a website for mobile using responsive web design. So really great idea. Anyway, highly recommend keeping up with Christopher, and I'll put some links in the show notes. Do me a favor, if you love the show and the episode that you just heard, could you go and leave a rating on iTunes? That would be awesome. Super appreciated. And again, connect with us on Twitter at UserDefenders, website userdefenders.com. And I really appreciate you listening. Fight on, my friends.